It's weird. Damn.
Okay, Dan, ready to go? Dan.
Up. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I have exactly 28 minutes now, okay?
28 minutes. Okay, let me record this too. I'm gonna do the same thing. I'm gonna hit record. And then you have to say yes, I think. Why can't it let me record?
What are you trying to record on?
On the video, I'm just going to
On my
record
Zoom
this.
link. You can't
What?
record on, no, never mind. You can't record on my Zoom link.
No, two people can record on Zoom.
Okay, all right. Then
But I don't
when
see,
recording.
maybe mine's already automatically doing it, so I think we're okay. Oh, wait. Okay, hold on. There we go. Send request. Okay. Because then you'll have it and I'll have
Okay.
it. Okay.
Hey guys, it's November 14th. Here we are, Dan Snell and Bob Sherwood again. We got 28 minutes of hot flashes information. We haven't been on since the election, so you know that one of us is happy and one of us is probably disappointed. I'll leave it to you to determine which is which. What have we got on? What do we got on the agenda for today, Dan?
Gosh, there's so many things to talk about. A lot of exciting things. A lot of things going on in Washington, D.C. with some of the appointments. We could talk about that. We could talk about my dog sounds excited in the background. Let me just step over here and shut the door so my dog doesn't interfere with all of our millions because millions are watching this. I don't want to interfere our guests. So we could talk about Wall Street seems happy. I think that America overall, we're looking at a fresh start. I think the sun shines every morning a little brighter. And we can talk about that, or we can talk about China. We can talk about world leaders. You got background, a lot of background across the world. What
Okay,
do you
well, let's
think we should
talk
talk
about a few
about?
of them. Let's talk about people have heard me talk about Intel, and I've been following Intel closely because they're the ones that were awarded $8.5 million from the CHIPS Act, the Biden deal, and then a low cost loan of $20 million. And after 2 years, Commerce Department has not approved their loan or their award, and so they've closed down their place in Ohio, where the construction was going on. They were given the money to build chips in the United States. Now, ironically, Taiwan Semiconductor was given like $20 million to build chips in Arizona. Now, since the election, of course, the president of Intel has been on the phone and on the text message to who else but J.D. Vance,
Yeah,
so the
he
new
should be.
senator from Ohio, saying, "Hey guys, where's my money?" So we're going to
And
find
that's where
out.
Vance should step up.
Well, one of them's got to step up. Who's the new senator from Ohio? Guy Brown or Warren or somebody?
Well, they now the Bernie, the car dealer Bernie,
Anyway, whoever he is.
defeated Sherrod Brown. He defeated Sherrod Brown, but Sherrod Brown is still the senator. Right
Yeah,
now,
well, anyway, who cares about Brown?
Marino, Bernie Marino.
Brown never did a darn thing to help Intel get their money. So after
Yeah.
2 years, I'm hoping they send Elon Musk down there or VREC to the Commerce Department and say, "Hey, look, why did you give $20 million to Taiwan Semiconductor to build chips in Arizona, and promise the money to Intel, which is the only chip maker of American legend still around, and they didn't get their money? It's been 2 years. Remember, the CHIPS Act was like July of 2022." Here we are in November of 2024. They haven't gotten a penny. They've been taking
Yeah.
shorts all day. So I'm hoping that in the next month, Intel makes an announcement that Vance has said, "Hey, your money has been released."
Yeah, there was some rumbling in Washington, D.C. because that act, there are always some people that from one party to the next, one administration, the next people want to say, oh, well, we want to take that out because we don't like that. I have heard some rumblings that some people are going to go after that CHIPS Act, which you and I think
Oh
are in
yeah,
agreement.
Trump is against it. Trump is against the CHIPS Act. So That's fine. I don't, there's maybe some detail that he's against, but at the highest level, hey, it was $100 billion into the chips business. In my mind, if you're against it, it's because it's not enough. It should be $500 billion. And but it
We need to
wasn't.
bring those
But the
chips.
real point is that the one company that could benefit from it, which is Intel, and by the way, Intel's announced they just laid off 12,000 people, right?
Right.
Intel is taking it in the shorts. And on top of this, hey, that's not all. Look at Boeing. Boeing today announced they're laying off 10% of their workforce. I think it was like 17,000 people.
That's tough. We need to support both those companies. Otherwise, everything's going to go overseas, and we're going to be right back where everybody's talking about everything's made in China or
Well,
someplace else. That's not
on
good.
top of that, Boeing, by the way, as you know, their Wichita company, which is Spirit or whatever the name is in
Yeah,
Wichita,
Spirit Aero.
Spirit makes products for the Airbus, European Airbus. Now, Airbus had to go to Spirit in Wichita, Kansas, which is supposedly going to be bought by Boeing, and give Spirit another $100 or $200 million in advance because Spirit builds products for the Airbus. So Airbus, a European company, is bailing out a Wichita, Kansas company. Now Boeing gave him another $300 million too. But here's the stupid thing: Boeing is paying what I can't remember the exact number, but $7 or $8 or $9 billion for Spirit. And by the way, Spirit is saying we're out of money. They're technically bankrupt. They sent a letter out that said that they call it a going concern letter. It's where your liabilities exceed your assets. And Boeing had to bail them out for $300 million. Airbus came in for another $50 million in advance payments, $100 million in advance payments. And Boeing still wants to buy them. Right? Close the goddamn company down. Get rid of them. Right? I mean, it's just ridiculous. I
Well,
mean,
I'm surprised that both our United States senators and also at one time when I was on the elected official city council here in Shawnee, Kansas, got to meet the mayor of Wichita a number of times. I think Bob Knight was his name, named same as the basketball coach. But Bob Knight did a great job of supporting the aerospace or the airline industry in Wichita. There's not been anybody that's really stood up and say, we got to make this place, Wichita, Kansas, rise up because you got the intellectual property and people there. You've got the workforce that's, less in Kansas than it might be other
I'm
places.
not sure what you're talking about. Boeing has offered to buy a company that's going bankrupt. Does that make sense?
Well, there's a lot of talent there. There's a lot. I mean, you got all those plants. You've got the infrastructure to do it. You don't have to go build it somewhere else.
Why would you pay them $7 billion and then loan them $300 or $400 million to keep them in business while you're buying them? It doesn't, what it means, they're buying a company that doesn't have enough cash flow to stay alive. Boeing just went out and had to what raise $24 billion themselves?
Yeah, and they've
Yeah,
got a
well, last
lawsuit where
month.
they're paying out $20 billion, I think, in legal costs for some of those loss of life and
I
things
don't know.
across.
I don't know. But here we got Intel on the ropes, can't get the money out of commerce. Boeing used to be a stock at $400 a share, or maybe 370. Now it's 140. It's at the lowest price in 10 years. I mean, it's just incredible. And I'm telling you, Trump or the one of the guys from Kansas, Mike Pompeo or somebody, they've got to get up in the morning and go over there to the Commerce Department, the FAA, and say, look, you're killing Boeing. And the same way with the unions, they're killing them. And they're killing the
Unfortunately,
golden horse.
and that's one of Trump's strengths is he doesn't believe in the status quo. But right now, a lot of elected officials, well, there's nothing I can do about it. I've tried. I've visited the Commerce Department, or I've visited with Department of Defense, and they're not going to fund this or that. You need somebody that just pounds on the door like a bulldog to get it done.
Elon Musk should get the president of Boeing on the phone. And get the union leaders on the phone and say, here's what's going to happen. We are tomorrow going to subcontract all of the 737 manufacturing to China. And all you union people find another job because it's too expensive here. You've made it too expensive here. It's your fault. We're going to, by the way, we're making our chips over there. We make our pharmaceuticals over there. We make our fireworks over there. So we'll just make our planes over there. What difference does it make? I mean, that's a stupid thing, but that's what I would do. I'd say, look, we're tired of fighting unions in the United States, fighting the EPA, fighting the Commerce Department, fighting the legal system. You know, we make the planes in China. If they screw up, we'll blame the Chinese. But the point is, we'll just subcontract it.
I don't think that's the solution, because in the big picture, that's not good for America. It's not good for
Oh,
whether
I
it's
see.
Wichita or
We
Boeing.
consistently do things that aren't good for America. Where do we make our chips now? Overseas. Where do you make our TVs? Overseas. Where do we manufacture our steel? Overseas. None of those are good for America, but that's what America did. So why not build our planes over there? It's consistent with the history of where we built things. Unless Musk or somebody gets up in the morning and gets their ass down to the FAA and does something about it.
Yeah, and Elon Musk, you know, is one of the, I think he's actually from the future. I think he's from 100 years in the future, we'll learn one day. And he came back and created all this great wealth and ideas. But he it's, you know, again, put yourself in the picture. You've been the head of Silicon Valley, you know, you've been part of running three companies, and you're a serial entrepreneur. If some and by most standards, Elon Musk is a young man, some young upstart that's smart and intelligent comes in and says, this is what we're going to do. There's going to be resistance. And so I think that's one of the thing in this whole
Wait a minute.
doggy, this department.
You mean they would fight building the planes in China?
Yeah. I
Well, of course
think
they would
they
fight
would not
that.
listen to the Musk. Like he might think they should. To him,
Of
he's
course
a
they would
global
fight it. But
thinker.
here's the point. If you're a company and you don't have enough cash to run your business, what do you do? You don't have enough cash. Boeing doesn't generate enough cash to run their business. They say that.
Yeah, well.
And that's every manufacturing activity that we've had in the United States that we now do overseas is because the companies ran out of cash and because the unions pushed them there. I'm not saying anything negative about the unions, but they don't understand the long term. And the long term is there's 38,000 people that should be looking for a job instead of holding Boeing to the fire about a 40% increase in pay. And by the way, the union people aren't saying that we're going to build more airplanes faster. They're not saying that we're going to do the labor more efficiently. They're just saying, hey, we show up to work every day. We should earn more money. And they say that to a company that's losing money. See, it doesn't make any sense. If I go in for a raise, I don't say, boss, I need more money because I can't make my house payment. You know what my boss says? Go find another job. I can't say to my boss, or I got to say to my boss, I can work faster, I can work more efficiently, I can do a better job, and therefore I deserve a raise. The union's argument for getting a raise isn't that they deserve it, although they say they do. They're saying they deserve it because it costs them more to live. It costs me more to live.
Sure. Yeah.
So what I'm driving at is that the unions don't say, we'll build the planes faster, we'll become more efficient. They don't talk in terms of cost reduction. They talk in terms of cost increase. And that's what's killed a lot of industries. Let's say, who was the biggest steel maker in the world 30 or 40 years ago? Everybody hear of US Steel? Let's see, where are they? Don't know. Everybody hear of Bethlehem Steel? Huh, don't know. Where are they?
Yeah.
Our last
Well,
steel company was almost bought by a Japanese steel company. Think about it.
you're a smart guy. You're a smart guy and a historian. So, I mean, historically, the unions were put into place because, frankly, people were working 60, 70, 80 hours, and they shortened it, you know, gave more wages. The unions, to start out with, had some reasonable thoughts as to why to get people together. Then what happened is the pendulum swung. And say the 60s, 70s, 80s, and unions became all powerful and too powerful and became a voting bloc and had a big impact because they were a majority of the workforce. Then, as you said, everything started going overseas. So the
Wait,
people were
wait a minute.
losing their
Things
jobs.
didn't go over. Things didn't go just start going overseas. They went overseas because the unions
Ford, labor,
the
right, because
company.
they got too powerful. But
Wait. Not about labor costs. It's never been about labor costs. That's what the union says. It's about regulations. If you build planes in China, you don't have to file reports with the EPA or
Well,
all the other regulations. So it's not that it's that much cheaper. I've been to this argument before, and it might say cheaper overall, but what I'm really kind of coming back to is that, God, I hope Trump and Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy will get it together and look at what's going on right now. What bothers me, even about Trump being elected, is that A, Biden isn't doing anything. Who knows what he's what where he even is. And Trump is kind of in no man's land until January. And who's going to wake up and say, there's problems we can fix? We can fix Boeing. We can
yeah.
fix Intel.
Well, that might be a good segue. What can Trump do in these now about 64, 60, maybe 67 days between now and January 20th? One of the biggest things he could do that would impress all Americans and the world and for the dollars is find a way as that is some degree of win-win in the Ukraine war. I think that would that he promised he would do it. He has conversations, with both sides. I think if he could do that before he took the stage on Inauguration Day, that would be great for the stock market. Of course, it does impact then the manufacturers of bullets and missiles and military, the great military complex, as some people say. But that would give America a win and put him on the
Let me
stage
build on your
early.
point. Let me build on your point. So we have given, let's just say, roughly $100 billion to Ukraine.
Yeah, and most of it's gone to American manufacturers.
Well, okay. Let's just give $100 billion to Boeing then. What's the difference? In other words, if Boeing needs $100 billion, why don't we just loan it to them? That's what China does. China supports the entire EV industry. They use their money to support the companies. But if over here, if we said, oh, let's give $100 billion to let's say who makes the weapons, let's say Raytheon. What if we give Raytheon, if we said, let's give Raytheon $20 billion? No, everybody would, oh, I'm against that. But if we give $20 billion to the Ukraine, who then buys $20 billion from Raytheon, that's okay. So my theory is let's just give $100 billion to the Ukraine and have them buy $100 billion worth of airplanes from Boeing and send the money right back to them. What I mean is the logic is the same. It's no difference. But we got to do something. And as far as Ukraine goes, Boeing needs the money. Commerce Department needs to release the money that's already awarded. So these are things that could be done. And I'm hoping that any day we're going to see an announcement on this Intel thing. Because I'm going to keep harping on it till I wish I knew J.D. Vance's phone number. I'd call him right now and say, get your ass down there to the Commerce Department or send Musk down there.
I might be able to get that for you, Bob, because I know a radio station in Ohio that one of the guys has his radio or has his
Well,
phone number.
let's see if you can get us on, see if you can get us a segment on the Ohio radio station where we would be talking about is what's holding up Intel's money because it's holding up Ohio. Intel has shown pictures of their plant under construction in Ohio, and now the cranes, which build the buildings, are sitting idle because
Yeah.
they didn't get the money they were promised.
And a segue as we're talking about Trump still and appointments, his Secretary of Defense appointment, Pete Hegseth, former has some background in the military, Army Reserve, National Guard guy that served overseas in the Gulf and has certainly some medals and honors, 44 years old. Been a Fox News commentator.
What's his job? What's he appointed to?
He's appointed the Secretary of Defense, 44 years old. I think, he's a talented, articulate, got for 44 years old, he's done a lot. Now, that being said, $850 billion plus budget, $1.2 billion, or excuse me, 1.2 million people. Is at 44 and coming from where he's at and the things he said some controversial things. never has managed, a room full of or an organization of 50 people, let alone 1.2. Is he the right guy at the right time?
Right. I don't
And what
know.
would
I
he
don't really
do?
know
That's the
him.
thing, is what will he
What does
do
he
with
do?
spending?
What decision does the Secretary of Defense make? He gets
Well,
up in the morning. What does he do?
he's supposed to be the overall guidance.
Oh, no. Specifically, it's 8 o'clock in the morning. He's now Secretary of Defense. What does he do?
Well, I hope he's up at 5:30 or before.
5:30, what does he do?
What does he do? He gets to the Pentagon. He's conferring, it listening. He's
Yeah.
listening and making
What does he
direction for the
do? What
Pentagon.
decision does he make in the first week of office that affects anything in the military? What decision? Yeah, you don't know the answer, by the way.
No, I don't know the
I don't
answer.
either. I know what Donald Rumsfeld said. He used to work for Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld said he spent most of his day defining terms that could be used in emails. For example, he defined the term, what was a, what do you call it? Not an insurgent, but somebody who's in battle but doesn't shoot anybody. And then he defines a person who's in battle but shoots people, because in all the communications, they have to be very specific about what they're authorizing to do. That's what he said he did. And he talked about it in his book. I've read two books on by the Secretary of Defense. One is Rumsfeld's, the most interesting, because Rumsfeld said, "I don't make many decisions, but because we communicate about engagement issues, I have to define, for example, what a combatant is. You think that's easy? What a com because when we say, oh, you can be a combatant, what is a combatant? Is it somebody who actually is fighting?" Well, so he said, I spent a lot of time defining terms so that when we communicate with the sergeants and the lieutenants and the other people, they'll know what the term is. If we say, you can shoot those people if they're a combatant, they've got to know what a combatant is. Is it a 12-year-old boy with a grenade coming at you? So what I'm driving at is that in terms of the Secretary of Defense, I don't know how important it has to be to manage people or lots of people as far as your background goes, because the military has always had what they call spans of control. The normal span of control in military is nine. The theory of the military is that you only manage nine people. So you have nine people in a platoon, nine platoons in a division, nine divisions in a blah, 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 right? And by the way, Eisenhower wasn't very old when he had 1 million people working for him and 100,000 ships and went over and took over Europe. So,
I don't
he hadn't
know.
had that experience. No, he had not hadn't had that experience before. Nobody had.
Well, he was a general. There's a difference between a captain that became a major appointment.
You're arguing that he had an experience in managing lots of people. Eisenhower had not had operational experience. People that worked for
Well,
him
I'm not
did.
sure about that. I'll have to do
Go
my
find, look
homework
it
on
up.
that.
Go on your Google, or if you're people listening to this, go on your Google and find out. Operational experience means you were in a war instructing people to go kill the enemy. Now, the people that worked for him did, Patton did, Montgomery, all those people. He had never directed a airlift of 80,000 people. Nobody had done that before. That's why the forecast has such high losses.
Well, I think that they have to be careful, because it would be like, okay, you're a serial entrepreneur. I can think of four or five companies. That's a whole nother conversation that you started and still run. But if I were to come in, because I'm a pretty good salesman, I made 11 President's Clubs in my life and
Okay.
traveled the world. If I were to come in and take over and say, okay, this is what we're going to do, and you're in effect, you are the general, you
You're
would not
making
always agree. You would
it.
maybe take umbrage. Good word
No, but
there, umbrage.
you're missing the whole point, of course, as usual. Well,
Ha
the point is that he doesn't have to take over because he has a staff of people to advise him that have been doing it for, 15 or 20
But
years.
that's his spoken word, is he's going to get rid of all those staff.
No, believe me, he's not. That's not going to happen. He may replace them with other people that are just as knowledgeable. He may take the top people and replace them with the second level people, but he has lots of advisors. He doesn't have to have direct experience as a Secretary of Defense because, after all, no Secretary of Defense that gets appointed Secretary of Defense has ever been the Secretary of Defense before. The closest he
Look,
came to it was working for Rumsfeld. So I'm all,
well,
I don't know
and
how many
therein
people out
lies,
there
I
try.
think, what with all the there's some good positives about the Trump administration. One of the negatives about the Trump administration is this whole loyalty. You've got to take the loyalty check, and that if anybody's going to come to work for the Secretary of Defense, they've got to be loyal to Donald Trump. And
well,
if they get
sure,
replaced,
that's what they should be. He shouldn't hire anybody that's not loyal to him. But that's standard.
Where's the continuity? Where's the continuity?
Listen, I don't know you know a lot of history, Dan. You need to read more. You know what happens when a new president comes in? Every cabinet member does what? Resigns.
Right.
Automatically. Right? In the military, in the Justice Department, every district attorney is supposed to resign. They don't have to accept the resignations. But that's what I'm driving at, is that it's standard. If you're president, you want people that are loyal to you. I admire Trump for that. Anybody that's not loyal, get rid of him, because he is the guy who's been voted to do something. He wants people that'll do what he says. He doesn't have to spend all his day convincing somebody to do something.
Okay, in my life study of history and my 10 years experience at a much lower level than elected official, you don't want to surround yourself with yes people. Ronald Reagan
you
said,
just said something I didn't say. I never said yes people. You
I know, but you were loyalty to Donald Trump. Yeah, loyalty is say yes to whatever he
says.
You
don't have any idea what Trump means by loyalty. Neither do I. But I know this: loyalty doesn't mean yes people.
In my, you and I agree on that. Yes, loyalty doesn't mean yes people. It means somebody that puts your well-being and success so high that they will say no. Now, in Donald Trump, in my study of him, and you know I study this a lot, he wants people that will not.
Name me one book you read about Trump. One book.
That's a classic. That's a classic Trumpism, is challenge somebody with a question. I study every day. That's all I do.
Tell me a book you read about Trump.
I haven't read a book on
Trump.
Exactly.
So when you say you studied Trump, what you really mean is
I listened to his words. I listened to his words.
Well, nobody, okay. I mean, this should be an argument, because our listeners should understand we do disagree. That's
yes.
For sure. That should what makes a podcast interesting is disagreement, right? But
yes.
If I ask a question, I'd like to get an answer. If you
There's
ask
people question, out there. This is what I love. There's people out there right now going, "That's right, Bob, give him hell." And they're saying,
no, I
yeah,
don't
Dan,
care what they
give
say.
Bob, push back
no,
on Bob.
No, no, no. There's no pushing back. If you ask me a question, I give you an answer. Ask me a question, any question. I'll give
what,
you an
what
answer.
What would you say your personality type is?
It's very assertive, analytical. That's what I come out as. High assertive, high analytical.
Okay. And would you say Donald Trump, you and Donald Trump have similar, I think, personalities?
Oh,
well,
we're not even close.
He's not analytical.
You couldn't be more wrong. You couldn't be more wrong. You know why? You cannot build a building in New York City. You can't build golf courses around the world without analyzing documents.
He just looks at the finances
documents.
Of it.
Huh?
He just looks at the finances. He
No, he didn't. He doesn't even do that very well. That's what we found out in his court case. But he should look at more of his financial documents. But the point I'm really driving at is that we're getting off the subject here. It's not a matter of what I believe about Trump or what words Trump says. I think what we're talking about, in my opinion, is that what can really happen in terms of we start out in the Secretary of Defense. All I know is what Donald Rumsfeld tells me in his book. That's all I know.
And Donald Rumsfeld was one of the best, I think. Now, a lot of people can disagree with that, but he was just outstanding.
Now, tell me one thing Rumsfeld did, by the way.
Well, he had a background in the military.
No, just tell me one thing he did as Secretary of
Defense.
He
was always in command, and when he spoke, people listened, and they didn't challenge his wisdom.
What did one thing, see what I mean? This is the discussion about. Tell me one thing Rumsfeld did as Secretary of Defense.
It's
Not
been a long time, Bob.
What did he do?
You
see,
kill
I don't
me.
know either.
You totally kill me.
I don't know
that's
either.
That's the classic attack the person. All I know is I look at the big picture. I don't dive like specifically. I look at was the era, was the season of Rumsfeld successful for this nation? And I say yes.
By the way, I already told you one thing Rumsfeld did. I
Wrote a
can tell
book?
you again, huh? No,
Wrote a book?
he didn't write the book. He defined terms.
Well, I think that's, I think, in the, especially in this day and age, we'd have to say everything right. Like you and I in this podcast, we don't say stuff right to each other always, and we challenge each other, but people are so politically correct. And that whole defining terms, what you could call a person, you know, at Guantanamo Bay, what do you call the person? Yeah, he did that. And
Why
he
is that
talked about
important?
that in his
Why is that
book.
important? Why is that important? Why do you think that's important?
Also, that people understand when you give an order.
Exactly. And that's a very, very important thing that Rumsfeld did. He recognized that part of the problem in the military was everybody didn't agree on what a term was. Even, for example,
But what his biggest asset was, you didn't F, don't F with Donald Rumsfeld. And the president would support him, he'd support the president. And he made good, wise decisions.
Well, what I'm really saying is that Rumsfeld understood that the biggest job of the Secretary of Defense was to establish a communication platform. And you do that
Yeah.
by definitions, right? In all my cases that I work on, we have to have terms construed that both parties agree on, right?
Yes.
One of the areas that we disagree on is that I believe in anyway, is that we don't agree on us on terms. For example, I don't use a term like big things or big picture. I don't know what that means, big picture. Is that like a 24 by 48 painting? I don't know what that means, right? So I have to be specific and more precise because I answer questions. Somebody says to Sherwood, what did Rumsfeld do? So, well, I know what he did, or at least what he said he did. And it was very
Yes.
important because we had big arguments about combatants. In World War
Yeah.
II, a combatant was anybody we killed. That's how they
Yes.
measured it. That's what McNamara said. And Rumsfeld said, that's not correct. What if we kill the good guys? That's not a combatant. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's what
Yeah.
makes us great in our interaction is that you are a detail and your role as expert witness, which still
Well,
amazes me how much you do that. Can't talk about it, but
go and talk about it all you want. What's your question?
well, what I'm saying is you do some amazing cases. We can't talk about the case necessarily. Someday we might, but where I'm looking at is you got these W's on the wall. I'm looking at how to make the American people and the situation feel like it's a win. It's a
You
W. You got
don't, you can't make the American people feel anything. You don't talk to them. I don't talk to them. Do you talk
one
to them?
person at a time, I do. Make
Okay.
one person today. Made my neighbor feel good.
All right. Well, that's good for you. Now, we've got to end this today. I thought we had a pretty good challenging we got on a little bit late here today, so I need to end it. And
Okay.
so hey guys, listen to it. We're gonna keep challenging each other and hopefully I can get, you know, my partner Dan there to define things once in a while. I'll keep at it. We're going to have an agenda next week. But listen, I want it to be challenging. We've got to challenge each other because that's the dialectic principle. The dialectic principle is based on challenge.
Good word. Wait a minute. Time out. Time out. You know, with my Nebraska, as I matriculated through that
Yeah.
Citadel of Higher Education,
Right.
the University of
Yeah.
Nebraska, with my
Right.
2.2 GPA. Say that word again. Dialectic. Delight.
Yeah, dialectic.
What does that
I've
mean?
talked about it before. Well, and I don't have a lot of time to go into it, but a principle is this, and it goes back 1,000 years. It's Socrates and Plato.
Ah.
You put out a thesis, and I challenge it. I put out a thesis, and you challenge it.
So it's
Then we look
dialectic,
at a
okay.
general thesis called a synthesis of both theses that we can agree on.
I love it. I know that there are
Now,
a lot of listeners out
you
there. They
sure
probably won't admit
listen?
it, but they're like
Well,
me. They don't understand that word. So the
sure do.
world's
Most of them,
smarter.
yeah. But here's the issue, right? The issue is this. This is why I believe we need the two-party system. I don't want the Democrats to go away. I just hope they'll be smart enough to figure out what their role is. I mean, when MSNBC goes from a 2 million listeners to 300,000 and they get rid of Chris Wallace, thank God they get rid of him, right? He was absolutely a nobody, right? At one time in his career, he was an important person. Then he went left. And not only did he go left, but he went stupid. And so now he's out of a job. Thank Kevin for that, because the last 3 years of his life have been horrible. Now, we got to end this. We'll start again next time with the dialectic principle, and also, where will Chris Wallace turn up? Okay,
He's
guys.
gonna, he wants to do podcasting. Like he wants to follow you and I. He probably wants to be a guest on our program.
Sign off, Dan. I got 30 seconds.
Okay.
Go.
Listen, great to be with the hope. We hope you've gone, yeah. And we hope you've laughed. Hope
All
you've
right.
seen, hey, there's two guys that clearly like each other and can disagree.
Okay,
And
guys.
that's why we do this podcast.
Hey, listen in, guys. It's coming back, and it's going to be challenging, and it's going to be rewarding. Goodbye, everybody.
Okay, all right, stay winsome.